pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Jamie.
Thank you.
Matt, if we can do a roll call.
Absolutely. Captain Bischoff, we can see you. Can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Good morning. Sheriff Daniels is in the room. Chief Kelly's in the room. Miss Kelly's in the room. Mr. Johnson, are you with us?
Yes, sir. Good morning.
Good morning. Mr. Lefevre, we can see you. Can you hear us?
I can. Thank you, sir.
Officer Medina, can you hear us?
I can hear you. Good morning.
Good morning. Colonel Silbert, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you.
Deputy Director Profiri?
DD Profiri for Dave Shin here.
Good morning, sir.
Morning.
Ms. Weiss, can you hear us?
Good morning, yes. Thank you.
Good. Say it again? Okay, perfect. All right, everyone is here. We have a quorum.
Thank you, Matt. And I'll turn right over to introduction, presentation, announcements, and right into your director's report if you wish.
All right, thank you, sir. Just a couple things. As you can see, Sheriff Daniels is our chair today. We're missing three board members. Chief Rod Bell, Sheriff Masher, and Chris Pittman have not yet quite been replaced. I'm hoping for announcements here in the near future, and hopefully we'll have a full board come February meeting. Several changes to your agenda. If you could take a look at your agenda, we're moving a couple items. If you could please remove the Del Pazo matter from your consent agenda. And then if you could remove final action case number 3, Martin Guerrero. And then on new cases, if you could remove case number 3, Anthony Shantz. We'll have those for you on future agendas. The only other announcement I'd like to make is Jennifer LaRocque in our audience here has been with us now. She's an assistant attorney general. She is moving on to what I would say are greener pastures. She's going to work for the city of Surprise. We're going to really miss her. She's done a lot of really good work for us. As I've reported in the past, Mark and Jennifer have gotten our caseloads down to below 20, which is a historic low number for Arizona Post. So we're really going to miss her. I tried to beg and plead. I cried a little bit when she told me she was leaving, but I couldn't match what they were offering her. So we're really happy for her, really excited for her, and we're working with the Attorney General's office to find someone to take her place. You can never actually replace Jennifer. So we're going to miss her. But, Jennifer, good luck to you and all that you do in the future.
Thank you, Matt. I appreciate everything.
Jennifer, on behalf of the board, good luck to you. Thank you for your service here.
Thank you very much.
Good luck.
All right, and again, if you're okay, I'll go right into my executive director's report. Just a couple things I want to continue. I continue to work with the Officer and Safety Wellness Group with IACP and iAtalyst, coming up with some really good ideas, and they're going to put together some national training for officer safety and wellness. Again, a very important topic. I'm also continuing my work with the RAND Corporation as it relates to recruitment. We're working together to come up with recruitment strategies for peace officers moving into 2021 and beyond. Another thing, I'm hesitant to even remind anyone, but I was a guest on the APAC podcast last week with Elizabeth Ortiz. I want to thank her for the opportunity. I joked with her that I'm not sure anyone will find my life story or what we do here entertaining for 20 minutes, but she made it really easy to be on a part of it. She sent me the link. I have not yet listened to it because I hate to hear the sound of my voice. But again, I appreciate our partnership. We have a really good partnership with APAC and Elizabeth Ortiz, so I'm just very appreciative of that. Sheriff, as you know, I attended the Arizona Sheriff's Association meeting virtually last week. A lot of good information. We have several new sheriffs, so we look forward to working with them and supporting them in their new endeavors. I also attended the East Valley Chiefs meeting last week virtually with all the East Valley Chiefs. A lot of good things going on out there. A lot of talk about COVID, the pods being set up, and the shots. So, again, I really think it's beneficial for me to sit in on those meetings and listen to hear what's going on around the state and then bring it back to Arizona Post and see how we can better serve our partner agencies. And finally, I was a panel member last 2 weeks ago down in Florence PD on their lieutenant selection process. I really enjoyed that process to get to hear the candidates make their presentations. I want to thank Bruce Walls for including Arizona Post in that process. Again, it keeps us connected, keeps us grounded. I really enjoy those. Excuse me. Just a couple of things I want to touch on legislatively. As we all know, the 2021 legislative session has kicked off. All the bills are starting to come out. Beginning in February, I'll start tracking. I'm already tracking bills, but beginning in February, I'll start giving you updates on the bills that I'm tracking that could impact us and law enforcement on a greater scale. And the last thing I want to talk about is our budget. We're back on track with CJF funds. We had one low month. We got a little concerned because, as you know, right now that's our only funding source. But last month we're back up to where right in our target range. So we're looking forward to a good year and being able to meet our minimum goals reference CJF funds. And then if anyone saw the governor's proposed budget that came out last Friday, as you see, we're once again included in appropriated funding. It's just shy of $1.2 million. We use that exclusively for reimbursement to the academies for every successful graduate. So we were using our CJF funds this year because those monies had gone away due to the way the legislature adjourned last year and they created a skinny budget. So we're using our CJF funding, our reserves. Well, now we'll get to go back to using our appropriated funding to help fund our academies, which, again, is very important. And finally, if you looked at the budget closely, you'll see it in there, a allocation of $462,000. We have been asked to look at creating a statewide database for peace officer misconduct. What that looks like, what that will entail, is still very fluid. We're still moving. But what that money includes is the ability to hire personnel. It'll allow us to hire an IT administrator that will work with Dan Wilson. It'll allow us to hire two data analysts. It'll allow us to hire an administrative assistant to manage the project. It's going to be a huge project. I think it might be one of the first in the country. So we're really excited about it. Ben had a good idea yesterday. We're going to reach out to iAtalyst and see on a national perspective if maybe we can set the bar, what it looks like, what that would look like moving forward. So, again, that's exciting. Again, it's a proposed budget. It has to be approved. And if it does get approved, it would take effect in July. But I can tell you right now, we'll hit the ground running in July. We'll have already had the infrastructure set up. We're going to start stakeholder meetings on what that database might look like in the near future, so we're ready if and when that budget item gets approved. And with that, I'll end my executive director's report, but I'd be happy to take any questions that any board members might have.
Any questions for Matt?
This is Heston Silver. Hey, Matt, I have a question. It's not related to budget, but I do have a question that this forum is okay to ask.
It depends on the question, Colonel, but go ahead and ask him. My lawyer here is already grimacing.
Well, we received an email yesterday that says that we have to fill out this form if we're going to recuse ourselves from a case. And I didn't know if there was – obviously, there's a revised statute stated here, but is there a statute that dictates that we have to fill out a form to say we're recusing ourselves from a case and give an articulate or an articulable reason that's written on that form?
Good morning, Colonel. This is Mark Brachtel on behalf of the Attorney General's Office. To answer your question, a piece of paper, a form, is not required in the statute. It is what is required in the statute is capturing the recusal and the form of the recusal. So it can't, if you don't have the paperwork in front of you and you can't get it back, making the recusal on the record during the board meeting will suffice. What is required in the statute, sir, is that a post has to capture that data and store it for possible inspection at a later time. So I hope I've answered your question. A piece of paper isn't required. It certainly is a best practice. At least that's what post staff has determined.
Okay, Mark, isn't everything these meetings are recorded, correct?
Yes, they are.
Okay, so then it's captured in the recording when we recuse ourselves and why we recuse ourselves from a case. Obviously, I think one of the changes is that you want us to at least articulate that it's a substantial interest or a bias issue, one of the two, right?
That's correct. Statutory conflict and a non-statutory, which is an appearance, the non-statutory.
Okay. All right. That was what I just wanted to clear up, because I would venture to guess if I had the question, then some other board members would have the question. I think it comes up quite a bit. And I guess my next part of that question would be, due to the fact we're somewhat more formalizing the recusal process, if before each case do we need to ask, are there any recusals so everybody knows when to recuse themselves from something if they're going to?
I'll defer that answer to the ED, how he wants to approach that.
You know, Colonel, that I guess that's something we'll have to decide. I can't think of maybe more than one or two instances over the last couple of years where there's been a recusal issue where we just had to clarify. But if the board as a whole thinks it's better for us to do that ahead of time, asking for recusals, we can do that on each individual case. But again, I'll defer that to the board and what your decision might be.
Colonel, I'll open that up to the membership on that too. And any comments, suggestions?
Chairman, if you're okay with it, how about I'll do an unofficial poll and we'll have a resolution for our February by our February meeting.
That'll work, Matt. Thank you. Any comments, please let us know on that. Thank you, Heston.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, moving on. Any other questions for Matt? Hearing none. Matt, did you want to talk about the goals and review?
Or? I would. If you just give me a few minutes to discuss. I think we've done a lot of really good things. The people here at Arizona Post have done a lot of really good work in 2020. I'd like to highlight some of the things.
Sure.
And then also give you some ideas of what we're looking at for 2021. Just so you know, this is just going to be a brief synopsis. If I miss something, please forgive me. But just so you know, just like last year when we created an annual report for 2019, you should be getting in the next month and a half, you'll get an annual report for what was accomplished in 2020. So just want to cover a few things. As you know, obviously rulemaking was a big thing in 2020 for us. We changed all of our drug standards fairly drastically. Those will actually take effect. They've been approved, but they'll take effect in April. And we cleaned up other items throughout the rules that were necessary for us to be more efficient and help us better serve our partners. Online comprehensive final exam testing is now complete. We do that for all of our academies as well as our lateral applicants. They no longer have to come to our office to take the waiver exam. We can issue that electronically at their location. Which is incredibly efficient for not only Arizona Post staff, but for our applicants. The digital personal history form, as you know, we now are the keeper of that record. Every personal history form now is done digitally. An applicant will do it one time. They can make changes, but we're able to track those changes. And what we're really hoping is that it can reduce the cases that the board sees where someone submits 10 applications and 10 different personal history forms. So, again, we're really excited about that. As of yesterday, it's only been 2 months that we've gone, actually less than that, we have 1,700 personal history forms that have been created in our system. So it's a really staggering number, and so far, knock on wood, the system's really working well. We've updated our technology in 2020. As you know, just the room alone that you're sitting in now was updated, but we went to dockable laptops in early 2020, and it was almost like we foreshadowed what was happening because it allowed all of our people to work from home remotely. We upgraded, again, the boardroom. We upgraded Classroom 2 now it's a full Google Meet suite, so we can host training in there. People can be interactive, up to 250 participants. We increased our internet bandwidth here in the building to support all of the technology that we're doing. Dan Wilson transitioned to cloud-based storage for all of our servers. We no longer have any on-site servers. They're all connected through the cloud now. And then we obtained a new video platform for all of our training content. As you know, through 2020, a lot of agencies had a hard time getting their continuing training hours. We wanted to be a better partner, so we upgraded our technology on our video platform. So now when Dan and Dale create outstanding videos, we can put them on this platform, which is much easier to use, much easier to access. So a couple other things in training. We built our new Basic Leadership Academy and hosted our first class. It was very well received. And now the goal is, and Mandy's not here, but the goal is to probably host one of those classes a month moving forward. So we're really excited about that. Once the restrictions from COVID are eased, we'll be able to do those. Mandy and her team rebuilt all of our subject matter expert groups and started working on our basic academy curriculum. And then we also, again, we changed our policies on distance learning vendors. We've now vetted our vendors. They're all listed on our website. So, again, anyone looking for continuing training, go to our website, see an approved list of vendors who already have Arizona Post approval for continuing training, and then reach out to those vendors to obtain that training. A couple other things we've done. We've reduced our OA waiting cases to under 20, which is a historic low.
We've scanned all of our historic documents. When I first got here, and when I went out in the little warehouse you have in the back, there were boxes upon boxes of old records. It took a lot of time to research, to find what you were looking for. Mike Oro started it. I think Mike Giamarino finished it, but we hired a company to come in and scan all of our old records. Now they're easily accessible, easily searchable, and there's no longer a fire hazard back in our warehouse. Moving on to 2021, that's just the highlight. I wish I had time to hit on everything that the people here at Arizona Post accomplished in 2020, because it's quite staggering. I'm very proud of their accomplishments. But moving on to 2021, just a couple of highlights I want to talk about. Rulemaking, again, just like law enforcement evolves over time, Arizona Post needs to evolve. So we're continually looking at our rules to make sure, one, they're clear, make sure they serve our purpose, and one, that they're efficient for our partner agencies. So we're already exploring asking for permission to make more rule changes in 2021. We're continuing to look at technology. We're going to expand the digital personal history form by allowing the agencies, once they accept that form from their applicant, we're hoping that we'll be able to create the A1, which is an appointment to Arizona Post. That'll be done electronically through the information that was added in the personal history form, which, again, will reduce errors. We oftentimes get errors when that information is transitioned by the agency. This will be seamless. We're hoping it's a one button. It creates an A1 for us, an appointment, and then we can start the new hire audit. We're looking at creating a digital platform to disseminate board material to board members. Again, I talked about our scanning project. We're looking to go almost completely paperless as our goal. We've already ordered an e-reader. Lisa Weiss, and thank you, Lisa, has agreed to be our test. Dan Wilson configured it yesterday. He put all the materials on it. So in theory, what we would do is we would issue an e-reader to each one of the board members. We're still working on the technology portion of how we would download that information for you, but your packet would come onto your e-reader, and you'd be able to go through all the packet information from your agenda through your e-reader, and then there's no more need to send out notebooks, send out PDFs. It would all be contained in that one document. Again, it would reduce the paper flow. And we're looking at updating rosters. We've had a couple cases over the last couple years where we've talked to an agency and found out that they had someone on their roster that we didn't have appointed, and that causes a whole myriad of issues that we're trying to resolve. So Dan Wilson and his team are going to work on how we upload rosters maybe once a year from every agency to make sure that their records match our records, because, again, they're not always exactly the same, again, which is problematic. Just some things on training. Hopefully by the first part of next month, we'll roll out. We'll complete all of our basic academy curriculum updates. We'll present those highlights to the board. And then our goal is by summer of 2021, all of our academies statewide will be implementing those. And then our rulemaking that we're hoping to do will encapsulate all of those so it becomes mandatory. So we're excited about that. This is a very large project. And moving forward, we're going to ask the board for some guidance on how often you want to see that curriculum updated. We're looking at probably a two-year schedule of updates every 2 years, updating all those lesson plans. But again, we'll have further information on that as we move forward. And then in 2021, we're going to complete and then begin hosting our executive leadership program. I just talked to Darcy Nichols now. She's in her office working on it as we speak. So again, I'm excited about that. It's a long time coming. It's taken longer than I had hoped or expected to have it done, but we want to make sure it's right. There's no sense rushing to get something done if it's not correct. So Darcy and Mandy and Ron Bain are doing a great job on that. And then lastly, compliance audits. For compliance, what we're doing now is we do training audits every year of continuing and proficiency training, and we had a schedule in our policies on how we did that. But we weren't hitting every officer. We think it's in the best interest of Arizona law enforcement as well as the community we serve that we do a training audit on every peace officer's training record every year. So we're working through a tech, because again, it's a large undertaking with just under 15,000 peace officers. So we're looking at a technology platform where we would be able to have the agencies upload their training records to us, and then we would be able to make sure that we actually had an ability to review every officer's training records in the state to look for any kind of deficiencies. Because again, I think that's what Arizona law enforcement should be doing, and I think that's what our community expects of us. So again, those are just a couple highlights for 2021. I'm excited about what we're doing. I'm excited about where we're going. I think Arizona Post right now is a really good team, very cohesive. Both sides of the shop are talking. And again, we're just looking forward to pushing the mission. But with that, I'm happy to answer any questions you might have about what we did in 2020 or what we're going to do in 2021. But also, I'm looking for any input from any of you might have on what you would like to see us focus on in 2021.
Thank you, Matt. Any questions for Matt? Hearing none, let me just say this, Matt. I'm very impressed. Being on the board for some time here and seeing what we did over the last few years, what you've picked up, your leadership going forward with your team, I'm very impressed. I really am. And I agree with you. One thing, we used to be here for hours doing cases, and where we're at today is just remarkable. So thank you to you and all your team for what you do and bringing accountability to the state, but also bringing our reputation up as one of the leading states in law enforcement. So thank you. And thank you all, team, Sandy, all you all, so for what you do.
We all know Sandy's the real glue that holds this place together.
I had to mention it, yes.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? Thank you.
Well deserved.
All right. Moving along. Okay. Consent agenda. I will entertain a motion for the consent agenda. Remember that case number 20-193, Del Pazzo, has been removed. So I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, this is Andy. I move that we accept the consent agenda as amended.
Do I have a second?
Bishop, sir.
Second by Don Bishop. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Aye.
All opposed say nay. Motion carries. Next on the agenda, we have a petition for applicant Tori Campbell of Sprice PD. Mark Brechtel, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. This is a petition by the Surprise Police Department. The applicant is Ms. Tori Campbell. During the hiring process, Ms. Campbell disclosed that when she was in high school that she delivered a small quantity of marijuana to another high school student. This occurred 12 years ago when Ms. Campbell was 15 years old. Her conduct, however, is disqualifying conduct under Post Rule 105A9. Attached is a petition from the Surprise Police Department, and Surprise PD is correct that the board should analyze their petition under Rule 105D. The board is to determine if the applicant's conduct is juvenile indiscretion under Rule 105D. In your board packet is a board communication which lists the criteria in Rule 105D. An assistant chief with the Surprise Police Department is present remotely to present the petition.
Thank you, Mr. Brechtel. Chief Yon, can you hear us? I think you're muted, Chief.
Okay, try that again. Thank you. I think I turned my camera on. Hopefully you can see me.
Yeah, good morning, Chief.
As you mentioned, so Ms. Campbell's currently 27 years old. She disclosed in her background that when she was 15 years old, living in California, so approximately 12 years ago, her sister asked her to deliver a small bag of marijuana to a friend. The friend gave Ms. Campbell $40, which she then returned to her sister. So personally benefit from the transaction, she did engage in the conduct. The behavior has not been repeated, nor is she in any other conduct that would be a violation of post rules since that time. In fact, Ms. Campbell went from having failing grades at that time as a freshman in high school to graduating high school with honors. She then continued on to Argosy University, where she graduated on the dean's list with a bachelor's degree in criminal justice and substance abuse. Prior to being hired by the city of Surprise, Campbell earned a position as a custody deputy at the Santa Barbara County, California Sheriff's Office, where she was employed for 4 years, serving in the role of training officer and transportation deputy. Her tenure at the sheriff's office was filled with accolades from her supervisors and peers. After applying for the city of Surprise Police Department, Ms. Campbell completed obviously an extensive background investigation, polygraph exam, and psych. Throughout, Campbell's remained forthcoming and consistent in her statements, and evidence she disclosed has consistently exhibited a responsible behavior. She's currently attending the Maricopa County Sheriff's Office Law Enforcement Training Academy and performing well. The actions of Ms. Campbell occurring over 10 years ago as a 15-year-old minor suggest that her level of maturity at the time contributed substantially to the decision to engage in the conduct. Since reaching adulthood, she has exhibited only exemplary behavior and has been successful in her law enforcement role to date. The conduct is not so egregious that the public nor I would lose faith in her ability nor the profession if they were to be granted. So for those reasons, I request that you grant a waiver to Ms. Campbell, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you guys today. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Any questions by board? Hearing none, I will entertain a motion.
Jamie Kelly.
Mr. Chairman.
Based on the information submitted by the Surprise Police Department pursuant to Rule 13-4-105D, I move that the board grant the waiver on applicant Tori Campbell.
Thank you, Ms. Kelly. Do I have a second? Don Bishop, second. Any discussion by board members? Hearing none, I'll call for the motion. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say nay. Motion carries. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you very much.
Final action cases. First case up is case number 18-031, Jose Sandoval. Jennifer?
LaRocque.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the board. Post staff and respondent, Mr. Sandoval, through counsel, offer the attached consent agreement found in your packet. The post rule violation is a failure to supervise under 13-4-109-8-12. A summary of the facts in this case are as follows. Mr. Sandoval was employed as a sergeant with the Somerton Police Department. In early 2018, he was investigated for failing to supervise an officer after the officer attempted to stop a vehicle, refusing to yield. Mr. Sandoval failed to supervise when he did not instruct the officer to submit a police report, prepare charges, and make an arrest in the incident. In particular, Mr. Sandoval did not acknowledge the officer's positive ID of the driver and further did not provide direction on the investigation. Mr. Sandoval ignored the evidence for PC to arrest, failed to follow up on documentation of the crime, and failed to verify charges were submitted. For the board's consideration, the parties propose a six-month retroactive suspension. Mr. Sandoval is no longer working as a police officer. Prior cases similar in nature provide a wide range of discipline, from no action to 18 months. Donna McDaniel, attorney for Mr. Sandoval, is appearing by phone if the board has questions for her. Thank you.
Thank you, Jennifer. Any questions for Jennifer? Hearing none. Mr. Sandoval, counsel, can you hear me? What's the name again, Jim?
Donna McDaniel.
Donna McDaniel, can you hear me? Do you have her on, sir? I don't see her on the screen. I don't see her, do you?
Do you have her phone number, Jen? I'm just saying if we can tell her phone. Yeah, we don't think she's on.
I don't see her.
Mark, how do you want to?
Yeah.
Should we table this?
Didn't she say she didn't need to address the board?
She didn't need to address the board, but she said if you had any questions, she would be available by phone.
So let's do that. Does any, if board members have questions, then what we'll do is we'll table it till we can get her on the phone. But if the board has no questions, like per her request, then we'll just move forward. If that makes it, that sounds
sure,
okay.
Sure, that makes good sense. Any board members have any questions they get to ask? Otherwise, we'll proceed into discussion and into a motion. Any questions? Hearing none. Any discussion? I will entertain a motion. I'm sorry, Don. One more time.
Yeah, I move to accept the proposed consent agreement for a retroactive six-month suspension of peace officer certification from March 2, 2018 through September 2, 2018.
Thank you, Mr. Bishop. Do I have a second on the motion?
Chief Kelly, second.
Chief Kelly, second. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed, signify by saying nay. Motion carries. Thank you, everyone. Next final action case, case number 19-110, Pedro Aguilar Meniz. Mr. Jacobs.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the board, Steve Jacobs, compliance specialist. This case came to us initially by an internal affairs investigation that sustained that Officer Meniz had claimed hours that he had not misused his department-issued fuel card to buy gas for his personal vehicles, misused his assigned vehicle for personal use, and misused the ACEGIS system. There was also a criminal investigation conducted on this matter, and on July 15th of 2019, he was indicted for 27 counts of forgery, one count of public money custodian violation, eight counts of unauthorized access to criminal history information. On February 26th of 2020, Mr. Meniz entered a plea of guilty for two counts of violating ARS 13-2002, attempt to commit forgery, each a Class 5 felony. He was sentenced on November 20th, 2020 for these offenses, and it was ordered to pay restitution of $5,000 to the Department of Public Safety, 2 years of supervised probation, and as a convicted of Class 5 felony, it is the board's recommendation that under R134-109 that his certification be revoked.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Jacobs. Any questions for Mr. Jacobs?
Sheriff Danels, this is Heston Silver. I need to recuse myself from this case on a non-statutorial recusal.
Thank you, Colonel. Noted. Any other questions for Mr. Jacobs? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, Chief Kelly, I move to revoke Mr. Aguilar Meniz's peace officer certification.
Do I have a second?
Jamie Kelly.
Jamie Kelly on second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor by signify saying aye.
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 Any opposed, signify saying nay. Motion carries. Thank you, everyone. Moving on to case number 4, 19-215, Chan Cunningham, David Toporek.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. This case involves former City of Yuma police officer Chad Cunningham. On August 22, 2019, Officer Cunningham and an officer in training arrested Mr. M.A. for driving while intoxicated and transported him to the prisoner intake sally port of the Yuma Police Department. While in the sally port area, a verbal confrontation between Mr. M.A. and Cunningham ensued. During the confrontation, Cunningham repeatedly closed the door to the police vehicle on the leg of the arrestee, who was handcuffed with his hands behind his back. Cunningham also delivered a kick to the handcuffed prisoner and sprayed him with OC spray in order to get him to put his leg inside the patrol vehicle. In addition, the internal affairs investigation revealed that Cunningham authored an official Yuma Police Department case report and use of force report form that was considerably different than what was observed in the body-worn camera video, portraying the suspect as more aggressive, and contained several inconsistencies and or incorrect statements that were identified by the investigators and included in their investigation. This matter was first presented to the board on August 19, 2020, at which time the board voted to initiate proceedings. The issue before the board today is to determine whether to accept, reject, or modify the findings of facts and conclusion of law and impose sanction if appropriate. The finding of facts are, one, on August 22, 2019, Officer Cunningham used unreasonable force by kicking a noncombative handcuffed prisoner in order to gain the compliance of the prisoner to get back in the officer's patrol vehicle while in the sally port area of the Yuma Police Department. Two, on August 22, 2019, Cunningham used unreasonable force by utilizing OC spray on a noncombative handcuffed prisoner in order to gain compliance of the prisoner to get back into the officer's vehicle. And three, Cunningham was dishonest in his accounting of events in the official Yuma Police Department report that he authored. I checked all correspondence that I had saved concerning Mr. Cunningham and could find no record that any time he or his previous counsel had ever requested a hearing in this matter. On August 21st, 2020, a copy of the initial complaint initiated by the board was mailed to the attorney for Mr. Cunningham. That letter was returned due to an incorrect address. The complaint was remailed on September 16th, 2020, and received by Mr. Cunningham's attorney. Mr. Cunningham's attorney informed Post that he was no longer representing Mr. Cunningham, but the attorney did provide him with a copy of that complaint. I most recently spoke with Mr. Cunningham on January 18th, 2021, to advise him again that this matter was going before the board today to see if he had changed his mind about addressing the board. He reaffirmed to me that he did not want to address the board. Based on the facts of this case, staff recommends that the board revoke peace officer certification.
Thank you, sir. Any questions for counsel? Or staff, excuse me. Hearing none, I entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair. Chief Kelly, I move to revoke Mr. Cunningham's peace officer certification.
Do we have a second?
Lisa.
Lisa, second. Thank you, Lisa. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, signify by saying nay. Motion carries. Thank you, David. Next case, 20-126, Matthew Neumacher. Mr. Jacobs, back to you.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the board, involves a former Tempe police officer who, between 2016 and 2019, was investigated by his department on three separate occasions for his failure to complete and submit reports. The last case came to Post following his resignation from his department. Between June 14th of 2019 and June 28th of 2019, it was discovered that Mr. Neumacher had failed to complete 41 reports. It also came to the attention that he failed to respond to the prosecutor seeking information regarding these reports, as well as to the court clerk. He had been already placed on a improvement plan because of his early permits failures, and following this investigation, he resigned. The notices of complaint were sent by regular and certified mail. The regular mail was not returned. However, the certified mail did get returned as undelivered. Contact was attempted by email and also going to the resident of record, where a message was left for him to contact Post. To this date, Mr. Neumacher has not contacted Post nor requested a hearing. Do you have any questions?
Any questions for Mr. Jacobs?
It is, I should have also said, it is the recommendation of the staff that the certification of Mr. Neumacher be revoked.
Thank you, Steve. I'll entertain a motion.
This is wise. I move to revoke Mr. Neumacher's peace officer certification.
Thank you, ma'am. Do I have a second?
Second, Chief Kelly.
Second by Chief Kelly. Any discussion by members? Hearing none. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
All opposed, signify by saying nay. Motion carries. Moving on to new cases. First case is 20-005. Alex, I'm not going to pronounce that one. Mr. Caldwell.
Morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Billy Caldwell, one of your compliance specialists, and this case does involve Alex Grigolinski, formerly with the Salt River Police Department. On November 17, 2019, Mr. Grigolinski was on duty with Salt River PD. He was in uniform and operating a marked patrol unit. Near 0335 hours, a dark Acura drove by his stationary position at a high rate of speed. Grigolinski pulled onto the roadway and drove at speeds of up to 95 miles an hour to catch up to the car. When he got behind the Acura, he activated his emergency lights and takedowns. The Acura appeared to be pulling over, but the driver ultimately failed to yield to Grigolinski, who then turned off his emergency lights but continued to follow the Acura at a close distance, running a red light and exceeding the speed limit as he did. It should also be noted that Grigolinski never called in the traffic stop or pursuit, so essentially his supervisors and dispatchers had no idea what was going on. They were unaware of that this was happening. as Grigluski followed, the Acura's driver ran the red light on North Gilbert Road at East McKellips Road, striking a vehicle in the intersection. The occupants in the Acura were seriously injured, and the driver of the other vehicle was killed. The collision occurred in Mesa, and their officers responded to the scene. They saw an area convenience store when he saw the Acura traveling at a high rate of speed ahead of him. He also denied attempting to make a traffic stop on the car. Thinking that this was odd, a Mesa sergeant specifically asked Grigluski at the scene and in a later phone call if he had attempted to conduct a traffic stop on the Acura. Again, Grigluski said that he had not. An occupant of the Acura later told Mesa officers that they were running from Grigluski because he was trying to stop their car. A Salt River sergeant checking the video system from their agency discovered that the incident was actually recorded by Grigluski's in-car camera. They also discovered that Grigluski classified the video as, quote, test, unquote, in their system, meaning it would only be retained for 7 days and then deleted. By agency policy, classifying a video as a test means the officer accidentally activated the camera or turned it on to make sure it was recording properly. So it's like what you would do at the beginning of a shift to make sure that the system was operating properly. During a later interview with Salt River IA, Grigluski denied giving false information to Mesa or attempting to conduct a traffic stop on the Acura. Salt River sustained various allegations against him relating to truthfulness, response procedures, and driving. Salt River also concluded that Grigluski intentionally misclassified the video in their system, apparently so it would be deleted and unavailable for further review. We actually have the video. It's about 2 or 3 minutes, Mr. Chairman, and it starts with Officer Grigluski stationary on the side of the road and then ends with the actual collision. And Dan has it ready now, so we'll go ahead and show it.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the board, that concludes the video. I don't know if you could see it on the bottom of the screen, but the in-car camera system actually shows the speeds that Officer Grigluski is traveling.
He got up to 95 miles an hour initially while he was trying to catch up with the car. And when he was following behind the car, as you saw, he was going anywhere from, I think, up to about 65, 67 miles an hour, and that's a 45-mile-an-hour zone, obviously with no lights or emergency equipment on while he's behind the vehicle. I'd be glad to answer any questions that y'all might have about this case.
Thank you, Mr. Caldwell. Any questions?
Oh, correction, Mr. Chairman, if I could add one more thing.
Sure.
Based upon the facts of this case, staff recommends that the board initiate proceedings.
Thank you, Mr. Caldwell. Any questions? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair. Chief Kelly, I move to initiate proceedings on Mr. Grabowski, peace officer certification.
Do we have a motion? Do we have a second?
Bischoff, second.
Don Bischoff, second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed, say nay. Motion carries. Thank you, everyone. Case number 220-032, Leo Buffa, Mike Delton.
Excellent, Mr. Chairman. Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning, board. This case does involve former sergeant in Phoenix Police Department, Leo Buffa. On May 28th of 2016, approximately 4:35 p.m., Sergeant Buffa was off duty and went to the residence of Mr. P.E. Sergeant Buffa had recently discovered that his wife, Ms. K.B., had an extramarital affair with P.E. approximately 8 years earlier. Sergeant Buffa created a ruse and lured P.E. out of his apartment. P.E. exited the apartment and walked past Sergeant Buffa. Sergeant Buffa then knocked P.E. to the ground and punched him in the head and face. While Sergeant Buffa assaulted P.E., Sergeant Buffa said something to the effect of, "That's what you get for sleeping with another man's wife." After the assault, Sergeant Buffa ran down the hallway out of the apartment complex. P.E. did admit that approximately 8 years through a sexual relationship with K.B., who was married to Sergeant Buffa at the time. After the assault, P.E. researched K.B. on social media and located a picture of Sergeant Buffa on Facebook. P.E. recognized Sergeant Buffa as the person who assaulted him, contacted the Phoenix PD, and reported what occurred. In July of 2016, Sergeant Buffa began an extended period of approved industrial leave from an on-duty injury. On June 16th of 2017, Sergeant Buffa was tried and convicted of assault, a Class 1 misdemeanor, in the Maricopa County Superior Court. On January 10th of 2020, Sergeant Buffa retired from the Phoenix Police Department prior to being interviewed by the Professional Standards Bureau and prior to the completion of the investigation or any disciplinary proceedings. This investigation was sustained by Phoenix PD as a Class 2 violation of policy. Had Sergeant Buffa remained employed, he would have been referred to the police chief or the Discipline Review Board for a 24 or 40-hour suspension without pay and possible demotion. Based upon the facts of this case, staff recommends the board initiate proceedings, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Dalton. Any questions? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion.
Jamie Kelly. I move to initiate proceedings against Mr. Buffa's peace officer certification.
Thank you, Ms. Kelly. Do you have a second?
Mr. Lisa Weiss, second.
Lisa Weiss got a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 All opposed say nay. Motion carries. Thank you. Moving on to case number 420-170, Tyken Soley, Mike Delton again.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This case involves currently employed officer for Phoenix PD, Tyken Soley. On September 5th of 2019, Officer Soley's chain of command contacted the Professional Standards Bureau, or PSB, via an email regarding DPS investigating Officer Soley for driving at an excessive speed of 100 miles per hour or criminal speeding while Soley was off duty. The email explained that Officer Soley refused to sign a criminal traffic citation, which resulted in a criminal report being submitted by the Maricopa County Attorney's Office for prosecution. The email further denoted that Soley had a history of being contacted and warned by troopers for various traffic-related violations. As a result of this incident, PSB investigators initiated an administrative investigation. Investigators learned that on Thursday, September 5th of 2019, about 7 a.m., Officer Soli had left his work shift in his personal dark gray 2012 Nissan Armada, including tinted windows. Soli was dressed in a Phoenix Police ball cap, his uniform shirt, which had a breast badge, shoulder patches, and a body-worn camera on it, and uniform pants. Soli's gun belt was on the front passenger side floorboard. Officer Soli traveled on State Route 101, or SR 101, westbound, and vehicle traffic was heavy due to rush hour traffic. Soli traveled primarily in the fast or number one lane, as well as the HOV lane. PSB investigators reviewed the 911 call for service, alerting DPS of Officer Soli's driving. At 7.02 a.m., Mr. C.R., an assistant fire chief of the El Mirage Fire Department, called 911 and said a dark gray four-door SUV was driving at a high rate of speed southbound on SR 101 freeway from West Bell Road. CR said the SUV almost hit the median many times and was swerving and weaving in and out of traffic. At 7.04, information from Mr. CR's 911 call was dispatched to troopers in the area, and Trooper Sean Roadcap was positioned on the shoulder of the southbound SR 101 at West Grand Avenue, milepost 11, conducting traffic enforcement. Trooper Roadcap observed a dark gray SUV traveling at a high rate of speed and changing lanes when the SUV passed his location. Roadcap visually estimated the speed of the SUV at 95 miles per hour and confirmed his visual estimate of the speed with LIDAR, which is a laser speed measuring device, at 100 miles per hour. The posted speed limit was 65 in that area. Trooper Roadcap followed the SUV and observed the vehicle tailgating and making lane changes without signaling. Roadcap stopped the vehicle at 7.06, and the traffic stop concluded at 8.05, about an hour later. During a subsequent interview, Trooper Roadcap told investigators he never lost sight of the SUV from the time he first saw it until the time he initiated a traffic stop. In addition, Roadcap said that he spoke to Mr. CR, the 911 caller, and confirmed that the SUV that he had stopped was the same one that CR had observed earlier. Trooper Roadcap told investigators he planned to arrest the driver of the SUV for either reckless driving or aggressive driving. Roadcap performed the traffic stop when he learned that the driver was an off-duty police officer. He told PSP investigators, quote, "I was just kind of blown away when I saw who the driver of the car was." Trooper Roadcap explained that he told Officer Soli the reason he initiated the stop was due to Soli's driving behavior, and further explained to Soli that Soli's driving prompted calls to the 911 operator. Trooper Roadcap said Soli told him he did not realize he was driving so fast. He had just finished his work shift, was tired, and was on his way home. When Roadcap asked Soli for his driver's license, Soli handed Trooper Roadcap his police credentials and ID card. Trooper Roadcap said he requested Soli's license a second time, and then Soli provided his driver's license. Roadcap said he returned to his vehicle and contacted his supervisor, Sergeant Gerald Baker, to discuss the traffic stop involving Officer Soli. Trooper Roadcap said he discussed the incident with Sergeant Baker, and Baker directed him to issue Soli a traffic citation for excessive speed only, criminal. Trooper Roadcap completed the traffic citation and then recontacted Soli. Roadcap told PSB investigators he handed the criminal citation to Soli, and Roadcap solely commented the traffic citation better be a, quote, fix-it ticket. Trooper Roadcap said he informed Soli the citation was not a warning, but a criminal citation for excessive speed, 100 in a 65-mile-an-hour zone. Trooper Roadcap said Soli disputed the citation and believed that he, Soli, had used his position as a police officer to avoid being cited. Roadcap told investigators that Soli said, "I can't believe you are doing this," and said that he, Roadcap, could issue him a warning because Roadcap had the discretion to do so. Roadcap said Soli then mentioned Phoenix officers work with DPS and routinely backed them up. Trooper Roadcap said he told Officer Soli he used his discretion already by not arresting him and charging him with aggravated or reckless driving. In response, Trooper Roadcap said Soli told him to, quote, "take a deep breath and think about what you were doing." In addition, Roadcap said Soli told him he could not believe he would cite another police officer. Trooper Roadcap said he handed the criminal traffic citation to Soli and told him to sign it. Roadcap said Soli looked at it, quote unquote, box by box, made a comment about the speed being 100 miles an hour, and said the ticket was inaccurate and told RoadCap to take the citation back. Soley handed the citation back without signing it. RoadCap said that he asked Soley a second time to sign the ticket, but Soley refused. Trooper RoadCap said Soley argued with him about the citation and RoadCap's observations of Soley's driving behavior. RoadCap said that he told Soley to sign the criminal citation, but Soley refused and stated, quote, I'm not signing this. Trooper RoadCap said that he asked Soley one last time if he would sign a criminal citation, and Soley responded, no. The trooper said he returned to his vehicle and notified his sergeant about Soley's refusal to sign a criminal citation. In the meantime, Trooper Cleve Overgaard stopped and assisted Trooper RoadCap before the arrival of the sergeant. He spoke briefly to Trooper RoadCap and then he contacted Officer Soley. Trooper Odegaard told PSB investigators later that his conversation with Soley was short and lasted no more than 2 to 3 minutes. Trooper Odegaard stated that he spoke to Officer Soley alone because Trooper RoadCap stayed in his vehicle. Odegaard said that Soley asked him how many years of service he had as a trooper. In addition, Odegaard told PSB investigators that Soley said that he had regularly provided backup for DPS troopers and told Odegaard that he should not be issued a criminal citation. Trooper Odegaard told PSB investigators he believed Officer Soley tried to use his position as a police officer to persuade him to tell Trooper RoadCap not to issue him the criminal citation. Sergeant Baker arrived at approximately 7:43 a.m. and spoke with Trooper RoadCap before contacting Soley. Sergeant Baker said that Trooper RoadCap explained the reason for the stop and why Soley was being issued a criminal traffic citation. RoadCap further explained that Soley disagreed with this decision and Soley debated the traffic citation. Sergeant Baker told PSB investigators that Officer Soley was, quote, upset, and Sergeant Baker said Soley told him he could not believe a trooper would issue another police officer a ticket and they, DPS, could use officer discretion. The sergeant told PSB investigators that he informed Soley the trooper used his discretion by issuing him a criminal citation, traffic citation only, instead of arresting him for aggressive or reckless driving. The sergeant said Soley told him about 4 times that they, DPS, could use discretion and not cite him. Sergeant Baker said he asked Soley multiple times to sign the criminal citation, but Soley refused. Sergeant Baker said that he told Soley he made a poor decision by refusing to sign the criminal citation and told him he was not above the law. The sergeant described Soley to PSB investigators as entitled. Sergeant Baker reiterated to the investigators that Soley thought he should not be issued a criminal citation because he was a police officer. The sergeant told investigators that he explained to Officer Soley the criminal investigation would be submitted to the Maricopa County Attorney's Office for prosecution because he refused to sign the criminal citation. The sergeant said he also advised Soley to report his contact with DPS to his supervisor. Sergeant Baker estimated he spoke with Soley for about 15 minutes, but he did not audio or video record their conversation. On September 17th of 2019, Officer Soley was interviewed by PSB investigators. He said he disagreed with the Trooper RoadCap's assessment of him driving recklessly and aggressively at 100 miles an hour. Soley conceded he was speeding and driving in the HOV lane, but not as Trooper RoadCap reported. When PSB investigators asked how fast he was driving when he was stopped by DPS officers, Soley stated, well, not criminal speed, but stated he kept up with the flow of traffic, which was greater than 65 miles an hour. After being pulled over, Soley said he handed his police credentials to RoadCap because he assumed the trooper would eventually want to see them. Soley stated he did not believe Trooper RoadCap could accurately measure the speed of his SUV while he was in the HOV lane in heavy traffic from approximately 900 feet away. Soley explained that other vehicles were driving faster than him, and the two 911 calls that came in regarding him were divergent and neither described his SUV. Soley said he did not recall tailgating or weaving in and out of traffic. When asked if fatigue had affected his ability to drive or remember what occurred during the stop, Officer Soley replied that he was tired, but it did not affect his ability to drive or remember his conversation with the troopers. Soley said Trooper RoadCap told him he planned on writing him criminal traffic citations for reckless endangerment, aggressive driving, and criminal speed. Soley stated, I was just perplexed by that. I know he has discretion, and I was wondering why he was trying to exaggerate, not only exaggerate what I was doing, but also write criminal citations for that. Officer Soli was asked if he made the statement, quote, "This better be a fix-it ticket," to Trooper Roadcap. Soli told PSB investigators he did not make that statement and explained he may have asked the trooper if the citation was a fix-it ticket. Soli explained a fix-it ticket was a warning given to motorists by DPS. Officer Soli acknowledged that he told Trooper Roadcap that he could use discretion and give him a warning, but did not remember making statements about Phoenix police officers aiding DPS troopers. PSB investigators asked Soli if he told Trooper Roadcap, quote, "Take a deep breath and think about this before you do this." Soli answered, "I don't remember saying that, those exact words, no." Soli was asked why he did not sign a criminal citation. He initially said that DPS was making false accusations against him, first of all, and you know that just the way they were trying to, you know, quote, trump up all these charges and accuse me of all the things that I didn't do, so I felt that it wasn't fair. It was more of like talking to them, you know, about the situation. PSB investigators asked Soli what the consequences were for not signing a criminal citation, and he said, "I mean, you can, one of these things you can do is go to jail." He was also asked if he was aware that he could go to jail if he did not sign the citation, and he said, quote, "I wasn't ready to sign their ticket right then and there. I was still speaking with them about the incident. I wanted more clarification." PSB investigators asked Soli if he refused to sign the criminal citation, just straight out. He said, "It's not that it was my fault. You know, it's not a decision. Hey, I'm not going to sign your ticket. End of story." He further explained, "I just don't remember if I said specifically or not. I'm still in the process of what I thought was, you know, just talking with them, letting them know my side of the story." Investigators asked Foley if Sergeant Baker asked him more than one time to sign the criminal citation, and Soli said, "I have no idea." PSB investigators told Soli both Trooper Roadcap and Sergeant Baker told them that they had handed him the criminal citation multiple times and asked him to sign the traffic citation. PSB then asked Officer Soli a second time if he refused to sign the criminal citation. Soli responded, "I don't recall." PSB followed up with the question, "You don't know if you refused to sign it, the traffic citation?" Soli replied, I don't. We were in what I felt we were in the negotiations going back and forth about how this was an unjust thing. When asked a third time, he told the troopers he would not sign the traffic citation, and Soli said, "I do not remember." Soli told PSB that he did not act rudely or try to argue the traffic citation with Trooper Roadcap or Sergeant Baker. He said he was just trying to understand why he was being issued three criminal citations for something he did not do. PSB informed Soli that Trooper Roadcap and Sergeant Baker both said they informed him his driving was aggressive and reckless, but he was only being cited for excessive speed. In addition, PSB reminded Officer Soli the citation was given to him on a clipboard. Soli replied he did not know what charges were on the citation and did not read it. PSB investigators told Soli, Trooper Roadcap stated Soli reviewed the criminal citation before Soli handed it back to the trooper and said he would not sign it. Soli said he did not look at the citation, but assumed that it had all three criminal charges the troopers had previously discussed. When asked if he was given the clipboard with the citation, Soli said, "I don't remember that." PSB investigators clarified and asked Soli if he knew what charges were on the citation, and Soli stated, "I did not read the ticket through, and that's the truth, Sarge." The interview with Soli was paused, and PSB investigators served another second notice of investigation on Officer Soli for providing false, incomplete, misleading statements or willful omissions during a PSB interview. Soli was adamant he did not know what was on the citation and said he did not remember the citation. He stated, "I understand that this is a speeding ticket. It's an allegation of speeding. I would not lie and try to make things up in this investigation. I understand this is a very serious thing. I would not do that." He stated, I don't remember reading through, looking at what the charges were on whatever piece of paper they were trying to give me. Additionally, Soli stated, "I want to reiterate, I did not read what they handed me. I would be lying to you if I told you that. I just assumed that what they told me was on there. That's all. I don't really understand how that would benefit me at all by, you know, allegedly lying about reading what was on there, whatever they handed me." PSB investigators contacted DPS to obtain the criminal report and all the documentation about Officer Soley's prior contacts with DPS troopers. DPS records documented Soley was contacted by DPS for various traffic-related incidents seven times between January 2012 and January 2018. The seven contacts with the DPS, the majority of which were moving violations, resulted in Soley being issued warnings. I left phone messages for five of the DPS troopers who previously stopped Soley. On November 4th of 2020, I received a call back from Trooper Osborne, who stopped Soley in June of 2014, and for unknown reasons, because it was not documented why he stopped him, he said he did not remember, did not recall the stop. On that same day, November 4th, I received another call from Trooper Sullivan, who had made contact with Soley on June 25th of 2020 at 6:06 in the morning. Trooper Sullivan told me he was dispatched to a minor traffic collision when he encountered Officer Soley, who was off duty and wearing a shirt over his uniform shirt. Soley had been traveling on the I-10 near 51st Avenue when he drifted to the right and crossed over into another lane, colliding with another car. Although Soley did provide Trooper Sullivan with his driver's license, Trooper Sullivan told me that Soley was uncooperative, argumentative, and generally unprofessional in his demeanor. When Trooper Sullivan asked Soley for proof of insurance, Soley told him he did not have the proof, and it was his job, the trooper's job, to prove Soley had insurance. Soley did not receive a citation for the wreck, but did receive a warning for failure to provide proof of insurance. Officer Soley was found to have violated Phoenix PD policies involving traveling at excessive speeds, criminal, using his position as a police officer to avoid receiving a citation, unprofessionalism during the traffic stop, and failure to notify a supervisor after being stopped by DPS. The allegation that Soley was untruthful during the post-security interview with PSB was unresolved. On February 18th of 2020, Officer Soley received a 240-hour suspension. Based upon the facts of this case, staff recommends the board initiate. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Delton. I have a question for you. In regards to the unresolved untruthfulness by Phoenix PD, do we know why it was unresolved?
Well, the only thing I can make out is he was using the excuse that or defense that he was tired and couldn't recall. And what I was reading in there wasn't clarifying why it was unresolved. That's what I got out of it, was that they couldn't really say either way if he was being untruthful or if he really couldn't recall certain parts of the traffic stop.
Okay, thank you. Any questions by board members? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion.
Jamie Kelly, I move to initiate proceedings against Mr. Soley's peace officer certification.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
I second.
Officer Medina, seconds. Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, signify by saying nay. Motion carries. Thank you, everyone. Next case, 20078, Courtney Hicks, Ms. Arlene Heckel. Turn it over to you.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. I will be presenting cases 2020-77 and 2020-78 together because they are connected. Officers Nathaniel Miller and Courtney Hicks worked for the Surprise Police Department from 2008 to 2020. In 2019, they were both in their Community Relations Department. On November 18, 2019, Officer Hicks' spouse contacted a supervisor at the Surprise PD and said he suspected his wife of having an affair with Officer Miller. On November 19th of 2019, both officers, Miller and Hicks, were interviewed, and both officers denied any type of relationship besides coworkers and friends. On December 5th, 2019, Officer Miller's spouse contacted the department and advised them that she felt her husband was having an affair with Officer Hicks, and she wanted them transferred to different departments so they wouldn't work together. On December 5th, 2019, both Officer Hicks and Officer Miller's were again re-interviewed, and again, both of them advised that they did have a relationship, but nothing had happened on duty, and all of the romantic parts of their relationship were off duty. On December 9, 2019, the Surprise PD received additional information from another Surprise PD employee and they told them that Officer Miller had confided in them that there had been sexual conduct on duty. On December 10th, Officer Miller was re-interviewed, and he did, in fact, admit to one time of sexual conduct on duty in the month of November 2019. He admitted to being dishonest in his first two post-Garrity interviews and admitted to cooperating with Officer Hicks to deny all on-duty activities after the first interview. The following day, on December 11th, Officer Hicks was interviewed, and she also admitted to the one-time sexual conduct on duty in November of 2019. She also admitted to being dishonest on her first two post-Garrity interviews and admitted to cooperating with Officer Miller to deny all of the on-duty activities during their first interview. On May 6, 2020, both officers resigned from the police department. Based on the facts of this case, Post staff recommends that the board initiate proceedings on both Officer Miller, case 2020-77, and Officer Hicks, case 2020-78. I would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Arlene. Any questions for Ms. Hickel? Hearing none, let's take case. I'm sorry.
Mr. Chairman, not a question, but a procedural question. Can this be accomplished in one motion, or do we need two motions?
I was going to make two motions out of it. Yeah, I was going to make two motions. So Mark Brack was giving me the thumbs up, so I know we're all thinking right here.
You are correct, Mr. Chair.
All right, thank you. All right, first case, 20078. I'll entertain a motion.
This is the item that we initiate proceedings against Officer Hicks's certification.
Thank you, Andy. Do I have a second?
Jamie Kelly, second.
Jamie Kelly, second. Any more discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, signify by saying nay. Motion carries. Now, case 20077 on Nathaniel Miller. Any discussion? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
This is Andy. I'll again move that we initiate proceedings against Officer Miller's certification.
Thank you, Andy. Do I have a second?
Bischoff.
Who is that?
Don Bischoff.
Oh,
second.
Thank you, Don. Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, signify by saying nay. Motion carries. Thank you, Arlene. Case number 720-122, Isaac Talley. Mr. Jacobs, back to you.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the board. Recruit Talley was appointed July 8, 2020, and was scheduled to begin attending the Northern Arizona Law Enforcement Training Academy on July 27th of 2020. However, prior to the academy start date, it was reported by an Apache County employee that Recruit Talley was observed at a party in Vernon, Arizona, where it was believed that he was with a group of people smoking marijuana. Recruit staff interviewed Recruit Talley, and he denied having smoked marijuana and claimed that he was at a party in Round Valley. Round Valley is about 30 miles away from Vernon. Excuse me. No further investigation or follow-up investigation was completed. Being a probationary employee, Recruit Talley was simply released from employment. It is the recommendation of Post staff at this time, board vote to resolve this case in the future, where questions can be asked and answers obtained relating to whether Recruit Talley did on 4th of July of 2020 smoke marijuana, and whether he was providing information about knowing that he was at the party in Vernon instead of Round Valley. Are there any questions?
Any questions for Steve? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion.
Lisa, I move to close this case and resolve it in the future.
Thank you, Lisa. Do I have a second?
Don Bischoff.
Second by Don Bischoff. Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, signify by saying nay. Motion carried. Thank you, everyone. Next case, case number 820-013, Tyler Aguirre Varana. Mr. Toporek.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. This case involves former City of Yuma police officer Tyler Aguirre Varana. In 2019, the City of Yuma Police Department began an internal investigation into an employee who was signing up to work Operation Stove Garden shifts under the name of other departmental employees. This would allow the employee to work shifts in excess of departmental policies. Operation Stone Garden is a federal program that allows and pays officers to assist in border security. On July 12, 2019, Officer Aguirre Varana participated in a post-Garrity interview as a witness concerning his knowledge and involvement in the manipulation of Stone Garden shifts involving another employee who was previously subject to board action under SOI 2019-229. During the interview, Aguirre Varana failed to disclose that he had worked a shift in November of 2018. In addition, Aguirre Varana failed to tell investigators that he in fact used the name of another officer to reserve a Stone Garden shift. In this interview, Aguirre Varana told investigators that he learned that another officer was using his name to sign up for shifts by word of mouth. On October 13, 2019, Aguirre Varana participated in a post-Garrity administrative interview as a principal to review inconsistencies that investigators discovered in the testimony that he had previously given. During the prior interview on July 12, 2019, Aguirre Varana failed to divulge that he had worked in Operation Stove Garden shift on November 20, 2018. He now explained the discrepancy as he forgot. The investigator reminded Aguirre Varana that in the prior post-Garrity interview, he stated that he was 100% certain that he had not worked the shift. When Aguirre Varana was told that a report had been run indicating he worked the shift on November 20th, he again stated he forgot. Later in the interview, he stated that he did not remember working on November 20th, 2018, and had he not been provided proof, he still would have said he had not worked that shift. On October 25th, 2019, Officer M.E. gave post-Garrity testimony to investigators, saying that he had spoken with Aguirre Varana on October 24th, 2020, by telephone. M.E. stated that during their conversation, Aguirre Varana mentioned that he had been questioned by PSB investigators concerning not remembering working a second Stone Garden shift and the buddy system that they had used to secure shifts. According to investigators, any conversation about forgetting a second Stone Garden shift would have been in reference to the investigation in which Aguirre Varana was now the principal and under admonishment not to discuss. On October 27, 2019, investigators conducted another post-Garrity interview with Aguirre Varana. At the beginning of this interview, the investigators explained that another officer involved in the investigation had given additional testimony concerning the manipulation of Stone Garden shifts. The other officer said that Aguirre Varana was aware of the system used to reserve slots to work, and when asked what he knew about the system, Aguirre Varana said, quote, "Yeah, I remember telling you at first I didn't know, and then I found out and that I knew what he was doing, but I didn't have any part in it, like he was doing it by himself," unquote. When asked when the other officer had shown him the system, Aguirre Varana said that the other officer never showed him. He figured it out himself after watching the other officer sign up for slots using other officers' names. When he was asked why he did not tell investigators this in prior interviews, he claimed that he did not tell them what he knew. He claimed that he did tell them what he knew. The investigators noted that in prior post-Garrity interviews, Aguirre Varana did not provide specific detailed information about the system the other officers developed. He tried to imply that he conveyed this information in his previous interviews. However, according to the PSB investigators, in his previous interviews, Aguirre Varana was vague in his description of what he knew and did not clearly explain his true and complete knowledge of what was taking place. Investigators asked him if he ever signed someone else's name up to reserve a spot, and he admitted doing so one time. He did not remember the name he used and added that he did not work the shift. When asked by investigators if he thought that information would have been important to disclose in any of the previous interviews, Aguirre-Barrena said, quote, yes, very important, unquote. Aguirre-Barrena said he did not remember until the days prior to the current interview that he was under and had just informed a sergeant of this new information a few minutes prior to being interviewed. He was asked to review the month of May 2018 Stone Garden calendar. He identified May 21st and 22nd as dates he signed up to work, either using his or another officer's name. Investigators asked him if he had also signed up for the 29th. He then admitted that he had. When asked why he did not identify those dates in previous interviews, when he was shown the calendar, he said that he forgot. Investigators asked Aguirre-Barrena what he remembered about a telephone conversation that he had with Officer ME on October 14th. He recounted that when he talked about the internal investigation that involved Officer ME, in which Aguirre-Barrena was a witness, and the punishment ME had just received, as well as personal issues. He was asked if he spoke to ME about being questioned by Internal Affairs for forgetting a second Stone Guard shift, which he was now the principal of. He denied talking about this. When he was asked how ME would know professional standards unit personnel had been talking to him about that, his suggestion was that he had spoke to his wife, who was friends with Officer ME's wife, and seemed to imply that she had been the source of that information. When investigators asked Aguirre-Barrena questions regarding his memory and his ability to recall significant events, he claimed his memory was not as good as he thought. Aguirre-Barrena said that after his interview on 10/13/19, he remembered he signed up using another officer's name and admitted he knew it would have been beneficial to notify PSU of this information, but he did not. The internal investigation resulted in sustained findings of violations for Yuma Police Department policies for truthfulness, failure to cooperate with an internal inquiry / investigation, and violations of rules, and was subsequently terminated from his police officer position with the Yuma Police Department. Based upon the facts of this case, staff recommends that the board initiate proceedings, and I would be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you, Dave. Any questions for Dave? Hearing none, I entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, Chief Kelly, move to initiate proceedings against Mr. Aguirre-Barrena's peace officer certification.
We have a motion. Do I hear a second?
Jamie Kelly, second.
Thank you, Ms. Kelly. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, signify by saying nay. Motion carries. Thank you, everyone. Final case of the day, case number 919-135, William A. Ponce. Mr. Pork, back to you.
Well, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, this case involves William Ponce, who at the time of this investigation was chief of police of the Colorado River Indian Tribes Police Department. On October 15, 2015, the Bureau of Indian Affairs initiated an administrative investigation into allegations that Colorado Indian Tribes Police Department Chief Ponce violated the due process of another officer that was fired. This allegation was deemed unfounded. However, during the course of that investigation, it was also alleged that Ponce engaged in sexual activities while on duty. This resulted in a sustained finding of conduct unbecoming an officer. During the internal investigation, Ms. S.M. was interviewed and revealed that in approximately 2013 to late 2014, she and Ponce started seeing each other romantically. SM described how she would usually meet Ponce while he was on duty for the Crit Police Department. According to SM, a typical rendezvous would entail meeting with him and having oral sex most of the time while Ponce was in uniform and arrived in a Crit police vehicle. SM described an occasion where she met Ponce and they had a sexual encounter on Shea Road near the letter P Mountain. On that occasion, Ponce drove up in his police vehicle and got into her truck where they masturbated each other but did not have sex or oral sex. SM believed that that may have occurred, that they may have done that twice. SM recalled that most of the sexual activity occurred at her residence while Ponce was on duty and that she believed this occurred in early 2014. During the internal investigation, Ponce was interviewed and admitted to having a romantic relationship with SM. The relationship began with Ponce and SM sharing telephone calls and texting. This included SM texting nude photographs of herself. Ponce said when they were romantically involved, he met her in person 5 times or less, and that he met her twice while on duty. According to Ponce, he and SM made out twice, but the relationship never went any further. When asked by investigators, Ponce disclosed that he included sexual activity under the making out statement. Ponce said that he and SM never actually had sex, but did fondle each other's genitals. Ponce denied ever doing this in his patrol vehicle. Ponce did say that on one occasion while on duty, but on his lunch break, he and SM made out by kissing, but denied any sexual activity while at her apartment. Ponce also admitted that on one occasion he stopped by to see SM at her sister's apartment, and they just talked while in SM's room. Investigators asked Ponce if he had ever met with SM at his residence. Ponce told them that he had on one occasion, and during that encounter, SM was not wearing panties and tried to get him to have sex with her while he was on duty, but he would not. Ponce said that there was an occasion when he and SM met and they parked their two vehicles next to each other with doors open. Ponce also recounted at a time when they had met along Shea Road on his way home from work, where they just talked. According to Ponce, most of the times when he met SM was when he was on duty, but on his break in order to, quote-unquote, bullshit. Based on the facts of this case, staff recommends the board initiate proceedings, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for Mr. Ford? I'm sorry?
This is Heston-Silbert. I had a couple questions.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Colonel.
So this all this happened 6 years ago, right? Is that correct? Or 7 years ago, almost?
Mr. Chairman, yes, sir.
Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And at no time did this officer or chief, was there an integrity issue? He answered the questions that were asked honestly. There's no allegation of an integrity issue, right?
There was nothing indicating that in the report. Yes, sir.
Okay, and the initial allegation that was alleged was unfounded, and he admitted to having, to a degree, this relationship and having met this person on duty. Is that correct?
Yes, sir, that is correct.
Okay, and the department dealt with that or did not? They already dealt with that or did not deal with that?
Sir, in my checking with the CRIT PD, they had no record of this investigation, nor did they have any record of any discipline.
Okay, so this thing came about more or less within the last year. This allegation came out 6-7 years later, or it came about when? The actual allegation.
The initial allegation was concerning the firing of the employee. It was during that investigation that the allegations of sexual conduct were raised.
Okay, and what was the date of that allegation is my question.
Let me just refer to the report to give you an accurate answer. That would have been, the investigation was initiated on October 5th, 2015.
Dave, I think what the Colonel's asking for is when were we made aware of this allegation. It was within the last year, is my understanding, but do you have a date of when we were notified?
Sure.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I misunderstood.
Might understand that it's within the last year then?
Approximately. It took some time to get the appropriate documentation, but it came to the attention of Post within the last year and a half, sir.
All right. Well, having worked in Arizona law enforcement long enough now, and understanding the timing and where I think this person has worked since that time and is working now. I appreciate your answers. If anybody doesn't have anything else, then I'll make the recommendation, but I'll wait until anybody has anything else.
Thank you, Colonel. Any other questions, thoughts? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion.
I'd make a motion that the board take no action. I would normally say no action with AD, no action with agency discretion. But in this case, he's no longer at that agency, but I would recommend the board take no action. There's not an integrity issue here. This happened at an agency. It's an agency issue.
Thank you, Colonel. Do I have a second on that motion?
Colonel Bischoff will second.
I have a second by Captain Bischoff. Any discussion?
This is Lisa Wise.
Yes, Lisa, go ahead.
Could this explain why their recommendation?
Yeah. Lisa, are you asking the colonel to make comments on his recommendation?
No, as opposed to staff.
Oh, I'm sorry. Back to you, Dave.
Sir, the recommendation is based on prior cases that have come before the board. However, they have run the gamut. Whether the board has taken action, whether it has taken no action with agency discretion. So it's certainly incumbent upon the board to have the option to choose what they want to do.
Mr. Chairman, if you allow, and Ms. Weiss, great question. Over the last year, we've had a plethora of these types of cases, and we're really trying to find out where the board would like us to go with these. Several months ago, it was direction of the board that any case that involves sexual contact, sexual activity while on duty, out in public, wanted to be presented to the board, whereas I think the board took no action on a case that had occurred in a private residence while on duty, but at a private residence. So we're still trying to figure out exactly the board's clear direction on this, and that's why we provided that recommendation. But again, as you know, those are simply recommendations, and the board has the complete discretion to go in a different direction.
Thank you, ma'am. Lisa, anything else?
Yes, please. So this officer retreated September 9th, 2016.
Lisa, you cut out just a bit there. If you could say it again.
Was this officer terminated or did he resign on 2016?
No, he resigned to go to a different agency as the police chief. He is still currently, and to my knowledge, has never had a break in service.
And he's an Arizona police chief?
Mm-hmm. Correct. Well, actually, I take that back. Actually, technically, as of now, he's an Arizona sheriff.
Anything else, Lisa?
I'm trying to get my head around this one. Thank you for allowing me the questions.
Of course.
We're dealing with an elected official, and this became public in 2015. When was he elected to his post?
Let me just clarify, Lisa. It didn't become public to us until sometime in either early 2020 or late 2019, and he was elected to his post this past November.
Any other comments, Lisa? Or are you still thinking?
Yeah, the silence here is my brain trying to work on this. I understand where the colonel's coming from in his motion. I'm trying to base it on prior actions that Asbus has taken for allegations of public sexual contact. And that's all it is, an allegation at this point, as far as I can see from this report.
Dave Ewing.
I'm not sure that I understand the question. The allegations were investigated by the Bureau of Indian Affairs as part of their initial investigation. The sexual conduct came to light, and in their report, they indicate there was a sustained violation of conduct on becoming an officer.
But we don't have a copy of that investigation.
A copy of the investigation, yes. Oh, a copy of any discipline, no, sir.
Okay, just to clarify. Anything else, Lisa?
No, thank you for allowing me the questions.
Anytime. Anybody else? Any comments?
Mr. Chair.
Chief?
So you have something from the Bureau of Indian Affairs, but they didn't make any recommendations on their findings?
The report indicates that the initial allegation of improprieties in the firing of the officer was unfounded. They indicate a sustained finding of conduct on becoming an officer in reference to the sexual conduct. But no, there is no recommendation for discipline. And in my checks with the CRIT police department, they had no record of the investigation nor any record of discipline.
Is there any motivation that we are assuming is out of that this came out like years after the event that may have newly elected and now all of a sudden?
Mr. Chairman, if I could, Chief, that requires us to speculate, and okay. I'd be cautious to do so.
Okay. Well, I'm just trying to find out if there's anything that we found out during the thing that would lead us to believe that.
Again, I think we all have our own speculations, but I'd be cautious of voicing those.
Okay. Any other thoughts, questions? We have a motion. We have a second. Hearing none, all in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, signify by saying nay.
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 Nays, can you identify yourself?
Lisa Wise.
Matt Medina.
May I explain, Mr. Chair, my vote, please?
Sure.
I understand where the majority of the board is coming from, but it seems it's tragic that it's taken this board to ASPOST. And I think as long as these allegations are to be in any other office.
Lisa, you're breaking up a little bit. I don't know if we all got the end of that. Can you do it one more time? I'm sorry.
I said that the reason I voted nay is I believe he needs to be treated as any other sworn law enforcement officer. And it's tragic it's taken this long post-incident to come to light, but I think it deserves to be investigated and heard.
Thank you, Lisa.
Sheriff Daniels, this is Heston Silver. I can comment.
Go ahead, Colonel.
Well, two things, and I'd ask the director this. If we're going to, if in the future, if we're going to explain our dissent on a decision or our affirmation of a decision, we probably need to discuss that as well. I think that when we make comments as though treated such as anybody else, I think we just stated here, the investigator just stated, we've been all over the place with some of these issues. The one previous to this was a sex on duty, and had there not been an integrity issue, the discipline would have been up to the agency. It's not whether or not these people can carry a badge and do their job or not. It would have been up to their agency to determine discipline on that case. That was an integrity issue. That's why there was clarification on this one. So I think we've got to decide if we're going to do this from now on or not.
And I don't disagree with that. And I would highlight the thought of discussion. That is our opportunity as board members to discuss our thoughts, our feelings, and our projected votes, if you want to go that way, or how you're going to vote on a case. But Matt, do you have any recommendations? Do you want to do an informal, maybe, on how we look at this, or just take it?
Yeah, we'll look at that too. So we'll have two things next month.
Okay.
To update.
I think that's important. I know this board traditionally has always been leaving a lot of discretion up to the chiefs and sheriffs to handle these cases. So I understand what you're saying too, Lisa, with his last two and to include current positions, the concern there. So, and with that said, though, the motion did pass. So we'll move on to back to you, Matt, for future agenda items. Thank you. Thank you, Dave.
We've got nothing on our list for future agenda item other than the two things, talking about recusals, how and when we make those notifications, and then comments and discussion after motions or before motions. So we'll take a look at both of those. I'll get with Mark and the staff, and we'll come up with some recommendations, some ideas for the board to consider for next month's meeting.
Thank you, Director. Any future agenda items by board members? If you come up with something, get a hold of the director on that. And with that said, close me. Look for a motion.
Motion to adjourn.
Thank you, everyone. Have a great month. See you next month. Take care.